You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Is it too late in the process, though, to change that?
Nothing's too late, bro. Everything's made up in politics.
The Wire.
Since October this year, as part of Israel's ongoing war in Gaza, the Israeli Defense Forces have imposed a siege on the northern Gaza governorate in the Gaza Strip. The IDF has designated the entire northern half of Gaza as a combat zone, blocked the movement of all aid heading into the area, and sent evacuation notices to all of northern Gaza's inhabitants, effectively declaring everyone in northern Gaza to be an enemy combatant. I spoke to John Minto from Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa to discuss the implications of Israel's ongoing siege of northern Gaza for the area's Palestinian inhabitants. We also had a discussion about the implication of Donald Trump's election victory for the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories, as well as the media coverage of the clashes between locals in Amsterdam and supporters of the Israeli football team Maccabi Tel Aviv.
It's been 1 month since Israel began its siege of northern Gaza, where Israel has designated the entire area as a combat zone, separated it from the rest of the Gaza Strip, and issued evacuation notices to all civilians living there. Can you tell us about the impacts that this has had on the Palestinian population in northern Gaza since the beginning of the siege?
Well, it's put enormous pressure on the Palestinian population in northern Gaza. They are suffering under the most intense bombardments which Israel has launched at any time over the past 13 months of what has been a genocidal assault against Palestinians. So the death toll in the area is extremely high. The humanitarian aid getting in has been stifled by Israel. And the people, yes, some people are leaving. Other people are simply trapped in the area. And in some parts of the northern Gaza, anybody who is out anywhere is fair game for Israeli snipers. Now, that's been the case over the past year, but this has become intensified, that everyone in northern Gaza is regarded as an enemy combatant, whether they're a baby or a mother or anyone. So it is being described by the United Nations, by the Special Rapporteur for the human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories, Francesca Albanese, as a genocide. She's appealed to the world to take action immediately to force Israel to stop this, but Western powers, New Zealand included, have been absolutely silent.
Is this siege an escalation of Israel's previous tactics in Gaza, specifically the north, or is this uniform considering the way that Israel's been operating?
Well, it's uniform in one sense, that it's been indiscriminate killing across Gaza, across the West Bank, and across the Middle East generally. But it's more specific now to northern Gaza because Israel wants to ethnically cleanse that area completely. They initially wanted to get rid of the Palestinian population from Gaza and push them down into Egypt. And there was planning underway to do that. But Egypt refused to accept the Palestinian refugees. And in fact, Palestinians didn't want to go there anyway. So Israel has now decided to clear the northern half of the Gaza Strip, and it will annex that. They always give security reasons for it. They'll say, oh, we need this for Israeli security. What they're doing is ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population, something which has gone on for 76 years.
So just to reiterate, the siege is not particularly to attack Hamas strongholds or rescue hostages.
No, it's never been that. In fact, all the way through the 13 months, it's really been about an attack on the Palestinian people as a whole. And if you look at the statements from Israeli leaders, their political and military leaders all the way through, this is exactly what it is. You know, Israeli president, can't recall his name off the top of my head, says that, you know, there are no innocents in Gaza. This is a senior Israeli political figure basically giving the go-ahead to Israeli troops to kill and maim anyone they come across. But for the Western media, of course, Israel gives the message, we're attacking Hamas, we're attacking Hezbollah, we're attacking terrorists. But in the internal messaging in Israel, it's quite the opposite.
And so that sort of ties to the next topic I wanted to bring up with you. Do you think that the election of Donald Trump will have an impact on Israel's operations in Gaza, specifically the siege of the north?
I think it will. I think that Trump will give the go-ahead, will give the green light, will allow Israel to continue what it's doing, just as Joe Biden has. From his past history, he will be looking to cement in even more of these Israeli gains. So right now, Smotrich, the finance minister, one of the far-right ministers in the government, is just yesterday called for the Israeli political establishment to prepare for the annexation of the West Bank. So this is the area they call Judea and Samaria. This is the occupied West Bank of the Jordan River. And they are wanting to take over all of that land, aside from just the small enclaves that are left for Palestinian villages and towns. They want to seize all the rest of the land. And that they're preparing for that. And I think Donald Trump will allow them to do that. And that will mean, well, what it does is it just continues what's gone on for a long time. And the New Zealand government, unfortunately, we're just part of that Western cabal that refuses to speak out for Palestine because we want to stand with the US. And we've got a government in power in New Zealand now that is more closely tied to the US and US interests than at any time in our recent history.
Many Democrats in the States have said that Joe Biden worked to hold back Netanyahu and Israel's far right and worked towards a two-state solution, and that Trump's victory would undo these efforts. Do you think this is true?
Well, on paper they did. They made various statements about calling for a ceasefire, putting pressure on Israel for a ceasefire. And then when Israel ignored all that, then they put in red lines. They said if Israel crosses this red line, for example, the attack on Rafah, if Israel crosses that red line, there will be consequences. There were never consequences. Israel called their bluff and Joe Biden fell over at every hurdle. Israel has done precisely what it has wanted to do from day one without the slightest impediment from the US or Western leaders. And the only reason Joe Biden has made those statements is simply because he knows that internationally and domestically at home, people are concerned about the genocide, but he's done nothing effective in all the time he's been there.
And do you think Trump will escalate tensions with Iran, or do you think that he'll live up to his promise to stop wars, as he said?
It's a really big question that no one knows the answer to at the moment. In his last time as president, he ripped up the sort of anti-nuclear agreement, which the US and Iran were part of, whereby Iran would not engage in enrichment of uranium to prepare a bomb in exchange for provision of some assistance with developing nuclear power. But that has fallen over completely. It fell over because Trump pulled out of it. And then Biden sort of said he was going to renegotiate it, but he never did. So all cards are off the table here. Well, in a sense, they're all on the table in terms of the options which Trump has. But simple answer is, at this moment, we don't know. Inherently, the Republicans these days are less likely to want to go to war overseas than the Democrats. The Democrats were at war everywhere around the world. But Trump in his last time as president, he didn't start any new wars. He wanted to have a domestic-focused agenda. So there's a conflict there, and time will tell which way it goes.
The last topic I wanted to bring up is the reaction of media and world leaders to the recent brawl between locals in Amsterdam and supporters of the Maccabi Tel Aviv football team. Despite numerous accounts of the Israeli team supporters vandalizing property, tearing down Palestinian flags, and chanting death to the Arabs, most media outlets have referred to the subsequent brawl with locals as targeted anti-Semitic attacks, with world leaders such as German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and even Joe Biden making posts on social media echoing these statements. So I'd like to ask you what your reaction is to the media coverage of this particular incident and the swiftness at which media outlets and world leaders reacted to it.
Well, you know, there should have been a story in the media, and the story in the media would have focused on the vile anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian racism of the Maccabee supporters. We should have heard the chants that they were using. We should have seen them gathering weapons to go and attack opposing fans. They generated enormous amount of hatred against the Palestinian population, against the Arab population in Amsterdam, and they carried out the most brutal assaults on Palestinian and Arab people. And then when there was a retaliation, suddenly the whole narrative changes. Oh, no, this is an anti-Semitic attack. This was classic Israeli propaganda being played out and being... And our Western leaders and Western media simply reiterating the Israeli narrative. So it's deeply upsetting. Television New Zealand, Radio New Zealand, I haven't seen any New Zealand mainstream media which have covered this in any way which gives people a clear understanding of what happened. So, yeah, it's been appalling.
Do you think that Western media may have overplayed their hand with the coverage of this incident and that it could impact the way people view future coverage of the Israeli occupation?
Yes, I hope so. Certainly on social media, people who've seen what these people were, you know, what the Maccabee supporters were up to beforehand. And then there's a lot of it around. And our mainstream media knows it's there, but they just choose to ignore it because there's that built-in anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian racism. So I think there'll be the mainstream media are covering themselves in ignominy over this. They are becoming the pariahs which they claim not to be. You know, they are spreading vile racist propaganda against Palestinians and putting completely false narratives on stories which emerge.
And lastly, the Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa will be joining Hikoi Muate Te Riti when it arrives in Tamaki Makaurau later today. Could I just ask why it's important for those who support Palestine to join the Hikoi and why the Kaupapa matters to you as well?
Well, the Kaupapa matters extremely, you know, hugely to PSNA because we're fighting against a colonial settler state in Israel. And we are also working against colonisation here in Aotearoa. Now, the ACT Party and the current government want to take us off the path of decolonisation. They want to, in a sense, erase Māori as a group and say, well, they're just part of the New Zealand population. We won't have a Waitangi tribunal. We won't have this. We won't have that. And I think that is extremely dangerous. We're on a decolonisation journey and we're also promoting decolonisation in Palestine as the only way that Palestinians can achieve justice and human rights.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.